There it is.
There we go. Welcome to our spring 2016 all male review.
Oh, I get it. That's a two. That's when words are homonyms.
Yes.
That's what you just did.
Yes. Homonym.
Okay, so this is Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema. My name is Dave White. Butler. Gentleman's butler.
Gentlemen's gentlemen.
You're Alonzo Duralde.
Yes.
Very important film critic.
Yes.
Okay, so what the story is this?
This is an extra episode.
Yeah. No, we're not talking about movies.
It's a freebie.
They're all freebies.
Right, but it's a bonus freebie. It's an additional freebie in addition to the freebie we give you every week.
Right. All right, so here's the problem.
What is the problem?
The problem is that you send me letters every week from the linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Address, yes.
Address. And I
lose them.
Sometimes I lose them. I don't mean to lose them sometimes. I just sometimes lose them.
If you want to access that mailbox directly, you're welcome to.
I could, I guess. But here's what you know what I think I want to have happen?
What's that, Dave?
I want you to send them to me, continue sending them to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I want you to mark them as for Linoleum Knife.
Versus LKTV.
Or for LKTV, so that I'm no longer getting things confused, because here's what's also happening right now.
You're getting these confused.
The people who are subscribing.
Yes.
To LKTV.
Yes.
The people who are, not all the people who are subscribing to LKTV, because some of them are subscribing at the $4 level.
Right.
And they just get LKTV. They don't get extra stuff.
Right.
But the folks who are subscribing at $7 and up to the highest level,
mm-hmm.
they get stuff, and they're sending me emails now. That say, here's the LKTV stuff I want. So I'm getting them. I'm getting a lot of things confused here.
Okay. Well, again, now, here's what's happening. You could have had them send those emails to our email address.
I am diligently collecting the requests for special Linoleum Knife prizes.
Uh-huh.
I am not erasing those emails.
Good.
Those are going into a special file. I think what needs to happen now is that you need to send me differentiated letters to the shows so that they can go in separate files, stay collected, and not lost.
Well, great. I'm so glad we're having this conversation on mic, because it's so interesting to everyone who is not us.
I think people really want to know how the process works.
And where it all falls apart. So, anyway, we're doing this special episode because
all of your letters and emails.
We have so many dang emails that we have not responded to that we are devoting an entire sit down to just go through our emails and respond to them and let you know that we are reading them and that we have answers to your questions and opinions about your lists and all that stuff.
Right. Antonio says, how do you guys feel about spaghetti westerns? I think we're around the same age, so we might have seen the classics around the same age. I got to see for a few dollars more, A Fistful of Dollars, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and Once Upon a Time in the West in the 70s as reruns. I guess he means he just saw them on
TV. Yeah.
When I was still a kid and very impressionable, I loved all westerns. But Once Upon a Time in the West has a special place in my heart, because I didn't realize that the hero was playing a Mexican until the very end. The big reveal at the end was doubly cool for me, and maybe other Mexican kids, since he was the very first Mexican hero in it that I saw in American movies. I cannot tell you how impressive that was to a 10-year-old kid that loved movies. And this was a Facebook message that we partially responded to and didn't fully respond to. So here's the second half. After we responded to it and said that you had still not seen The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
True. But I did grow up watching, I remember watching the Trinity movies. I think I went to the theater to see Trinity Is Still My Name with Terrence Hill. And I remember watching For a Few Dollars More on the ABC Sunday night movie.
Right.
So yeah, I definitely was exposed to spaghetti westerns.
Antonio responds.
I haven't seen Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but I have seen the other ones.
How can someone be your age and not have seen The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
It fell between the cracks. It's on my list to get to it. Here's the weird thing. I have seen Duck, You Sucker, and I have not seen The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So go figure.
He says, this might sound weird, but Alonso and I have very similar taste in movies, except for Holy Motors, which I just don't get. He goes, we also have very similar taste in sex partners.
Okay. We're getting personal now.
He says, I mean, it's odd that we're so similar, since he's a Spaniard, and I'm a Mexican, and he's married to a guy, and I'm married to a girl.
Is he married to a very Dave White-ish woman? What is he talking about?
I hope so. I want to meet her. She and I have a lot in common. I always assumed that it was because we both grew up with the same movies, but apparently not. Let him know that he needs to watch it soon so that my perception of the universe can fall back into place.
I'm sure that Mr. Tarantino will be screening it with some regularity at the New Beverly, so I will go see it one of these days.
He's already screened it a couple times.
Right, I'm sure. Yeah. And I'm sure he will again.
Yeah,
yeah, no, it's just one that I have not, I've just always managed to somehow miss. But what did I see?
He means that I'm like a girl.
Maybe. I don't know.
I do all the cooking.
Okay, now you're being sexist.
You're right, I am.
Yes.
But that's what people think. People think about that. They like, the wife cooks. That's what they think.
Oh, no, now I remember. I went to a double feature of the New Beverly of Duck, You Sucker. Do you know this movie?
Yes.
And Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
Because it sounds like Alonzo Duralde?
No. I told you this story, right?
I'm kidding. Keep talking.
No, but I told you the story, though, right?
Maybe.
My father's best friend...
Oh, is Alfredo Garcia.
Was named Alfredo Garcia.
That's right.
As is his son, who is still alive. I would hope that he owned, a framed poster. I don't know if he does or not.
If I were named Alfredo Garcia, I absolutely would own...
Wouldn't you?
A poster for that.
I know. How cool is that?
Yeah. Hello, Dave. I really enjoyed your episode of Sewers of Paris. I was on an episode of the Sewers of Paris podcast.
Yes, as was I.
So were you, separately. We were...
We each got our own
so
episode.
So nice, they did us twice.
Yes, and then we also both appeared on the Christmas special.
Right. There was one thing that I was surprised by. I would have guessed that with the combination of gay, hardcore punk rock, and Texas, you would have mentioned the band MDC. Were they not a band you were into? That's from Amos.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more. I know nothing of this MDC.
I was into them enough. But I can't say that I ever bought any of their albums.
Were they gay?
No. They were just really political.
Ah.
So
Consolidated.
Yes, Alonzo, just like that.
Yes.
Just like that ridiculous band, Consolidated.
Were they were Texan then?
Yeah.
Okay.
I liked the Big Boys. Saw the Big Boys. I liked the Dicks. Butthole Surfers and...
So you like the Big Boys, the Dicks, and the Buttholes. You just said that, literally.
Those are the names of bands that people know.
I know.
People know the names of those bands because those were important punk rock bands of Texas in the 80s.
All right. I'd never heard of the Big Boys. I know the other two. Have you watched that Dicks from Texas documentary?
I still haven't. It's still sitting on a stack. I talk all big. I'm like, I'm going to watch this week. And then it goes on the top of Mount Unwatched. Yeah. And then, yeah. But I will. I hear it's kind of an okay documentary, but I still want to watch it.
Sure.
Like, I think I bought, like, a bunch of those. This will only make sense to people who were really into hardcore punk rock in the 80s.
Cassettes?
No. Maximum Rock and Roll, like the zine of punk rock in the 80s, they would advertise all these compilations. The hardcore compilation was a big thing back then. And it was a way to hear all these different kinds of bands and spend a very little amount of money. Mm-hmm. So I would buy a lot of compilations. And MDC always managed to be on these compilations. So I heard lots of MDC. I just didn't ever buy any of their albums. Yeah, so
it was like how every time you bought one of those Just Say Yes compilations, Ofra Haza was always on it. And Danielle Dax.
A house.
We're dating ourselves.
We're not dating ourselves. Everyone already knows we're old. What's happening is that bizarre divide
right.
that would have fully separated you from me back then in those days. Which means it's a good thing we didn't meet until 1995.
Right.
When we were both grown.
What, because I liked the Just Say collections? That made me suspect?
Yeah, you had...
I didn't like everything on all of them, but, you know.
I'm saying that your taste in music back in the 80s. What's the right word for it? Jangly. Jingly-jangly.
Jingly-pingly?
Jingly-higgledy-piggledy, jingly-pingly.
Am I a kitty cat? Am I all jingly-pingly?
When you are punk rock, in general, it cannot be hard enough or rough enough or mean enough or angry enough or fast enough.
Mm-hmm. Also, you cry when the Carpenters sing.
Everyone does.
Yeah, I know, but I just want to be clear here.
Everybody cries when the Carpenters sing.
I know, you're...
That's Karen Carpenter. We're not talking about Karen Carpenter
You're
right
fronting
now.
All punk rock right now.
No, I'm saying that punk rock was the dominant force in my life at that moment.
Yes, yes.
Obviously, it did not remain the dominant force in my life. It became part of my musical taste.
Yes.
Now that I'm 105 years old... It's a chunk of my iTunes.
Yes.
That I return to and occasionally delete when I think to myself, these guys, band whatever, were always a bit samey. I don't think I have to hear them anymore.
You don't keep like one?
No.
Okay.
No, I've actually eliminated entire bands.
Wow.
And their entire discographies from my iTunes. Hmm. And my actual collection of records. Because I think, you know what? That was for when I was 20.
Right.
You know?
I hear you.
So, all right. Does that answer the question? I don't know.
Well, they want to know if you were into MDC, and it sounds like you knew of them and had some of the stuff.
Yeah, I never saw them live or anything, you know. This is from Owen in Australia. Dear Dave White, these last two have been directly to me. I don't know.
Apparently, yes.
Every time I see old people eating ice cream, all I can think about is Monica Mana and those two old women eating ice cream on the return trip and the one who is terrible at eating ice cream. How hard is it to eat ice cream? I blame you for this, and by blame, I mean thank you for this beautiful gift. Owen from Melbourne. Thank you, Owen, from Melbourne. Have y'all seen Monica Mana? Still, has anyone not seen it yet? I mean, I guess since we talked about the film, the documentary, Monica Mana, we've added new listeners.
Sure.
Monica Mana is an incredible documentary set in Nepal about people who travel in a cable car up to the top of a mountain to a Hindu shrine.
Right.
And it is...
And then back down again.
And then back down again. And it is one of my favorite films of the past several years. I loved it so much. I saw it once, and then I dragged you to see it.
Yes.
And I cannot recommend it highly enough. It's almost entirely silent. There's very, very little talking.
And the camera is locked down.
Yeah. It's so great.
But there's a scene where two old women eat ice cream bars, and they've obviously not eaten a lot of ice cream in their lives, so they don't understand there's a time element involved. And suddenly they're realizing that, you know, they're not beating the clock, and they got to, like, step it up, and then they start laughing about it.
If you are sick of religious people, this movie might change your mind. It is a source of inexpressible joy.
It's worth seeing for sure.
This is from Danny. Spelled D-A-N-I, Danny. Mm. Hello, Alonzo and Dave. I wanted to say first a big thank you for your podcast. I've had a lot of rough nights due to depression and anxiety. And listening to the two of you bicker with and tease each other never fails to make me smile. You're one of the few podcasts that I actively and eagerly anticipate an update from.
Oh, thank you.
I've been listening to the podcast for about a year after finding my way over from What the Flick.
Oh, great.
Which I, in turn, found due to their first Game of Thrones recaps.
Ah.
And I never thought I had enough favorite movies to send you guys a top 10 list, but the thought kept popping into my mind every time you guys read another listener's list, and make such great commentary. So I've decided to give it a go. A warning, I blog for a horror review channel and review horror films on my own blog as well. So there might be a couple horror films on this list. You're in the right place because I love that stuff. In no particular order.
Okay.
Filth and Wisdom.
Whoa, that's a hot ticket.
That is never... first of all, I don't know any other human being that has seen Filth and Wisdom. I had to review it.
Yeah.
And...
This is Madonna's first film that they pretend she hadn't made when W.E. came out.
When Madonna made W.E., when she directed W.E., Weinstein Company decided to say that it was her debut feature.
Lies.
We don't know why, but it was a complete lie because Filth and Wisdom was her first debut feature. And
her first debut feature.
It's a hot mess. And it's got that guy from Gogo Bordello in it.
Right.
And he alone makes it worth looking at for me anyway. Because I feel as though, and I've said this before on the show, I feel as though she might not have been able to control him as a director. And anyone that Madonna can't control...
is automatically interesting.
Is automatically interesting. Thank you. Exactly. Took those words right out of my face.
Sorry.
And so, it's a curiosity. Honestly, I don't remember what it was about at this point. It's been so long since I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking, this is a bad film. But I can see there being a fascination with it. And if you're a big Madonna fan, you should definitely be seeing it. I'm surprised that some of our friends who are insane Madonna fans haven't seen these two films.
True. So are you...
W.E. ain't even all that bad.
No, it was okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to credit this one or no? For the list? In the knifing, are you going to give points for this?
I still think it's a bad film, so no points.
Okay.
But interesting to look at. Okay, Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah.
Everything is Illuminated.
Ugh, no. Sorry, no.
That wasn't bad.
It wasn't that bad.
I'm going to give it to him.
Fine.
It's not a good movie.
Do we know that Danny is a him or
her? It's not a garbage movie. I do not know Danny's gender.
Okay. Let's just not go jumping to conclusions here.
Did I say he?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so anyway.
Carry on.
Wrist Cutters, A Love Story. I haven't seen it.
Didn't see it.
Yeah. Leon, The Professional.
I've
Still never seen it.
It's real cool.
I know. It's been, it's on that list of, you know, Donovan and I years ago back on LiveJournal, like,
yeah,
gave each other an assignment of like five movies from the IMDb top 500 that we were to make the other one watch.
Yeah.
And that was one of mine. I thought,
Walk the Line.
Okay.
In parentheses, because it reminds me of my grandfather. It was the last movie we saw together.
Oh, wow.
What a good movie to see with your grandpa.
Yeah, totally. I thought Danny was going to say, because it reminds me of Walk Hard.
Horsehead, which I have not seen.
Never heard of Horsehead. I don't know what that is.
Antiviral, which I have not seen. Brandon Cronenberg.
Oh, no, didn't see him.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. And The Addams Family. okay, so you get all the ones we haven't seen as benefit of the doubt.
So I'd say that's a 90 then, because
you minus everything is illuminated,
right? And you minus
your 90% knife, yeah. Danny.
Yeah, well done.
Am I So Good It's Bad? Honorable mention is The Resident, starring Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Hilary Swank, which I have had to defend several times to horror fans who simply write it off. But yes, it's bad. Really satisfyingly bad. Thanks for reading, and thank you for your time. I hope you both have an awesome day.
Thank you.
We are.
Wait, is Jeffrey Dean Morgan also in P.S. I Love You?
Uh-huh.
Double feature.
Hey, guess who this one's from?
Statistically speaking,
you're right.
I would say Noah Whittaker.
Hey, sweetie pies. I've been on a linoleum knife hiatus. Oh, what's that mean? What's that mean, Noah?
What could possibly be more important in your life?
He says, I've been bettering myself. I've been becoming the best version of myself. I've been becoming Noah Whittaker 2.0. Last night, I bought organic extra virgin coconut oil. This kid. Palmer's cocoa butter and African black soap. My skin has never looked better.
Well, all right then. I could see where that would be eat into your linoleum knife time.
I've grown the reasonable amount of penis to ask out this girl who has been giving me signs that she's into chocolate me. And she said yes. Mr. Duralde and Mr. White, I am no longer single. Noah has a girlfriend.
Wait, you...
And she's a 10, y'all.
You asked her out and she said yes, and now she's your girlfriend?
I don't know how this works.
I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt on this one. You've left steps out.
Let's let him keep telling us
okay,
things.
Okay, okay.
And she's a 10, y'all. I shoot for the stars. And y'all also better know, if you saw this girl, you'd think she worked for every clothing brand and modeling association.
Ooh, the modeling associations. My agent is trying to get me into one of the better modeling associations. Like Arsenal.
Now, here's my question related to film. I actually don't have a question related to film. I just needed some on-air legitimate relationship advice.
Ah.
I really do. Like, a lot. Seriously. And sure, I guess Alonzo can chime in. What kind of relationship advice do you need, Noah?
Read on, Macduff.
Well, that's the end of those. It's just, love you, Dave. Noah, 15 and a half.
Oh.
Taken. Still searching for a sexual orientation. Black. Long Beach. Well, your sexual orientation would seem to be whatever you feel like it being. Honestly, okay.
Wait, generic? That's not what he's asking.
Let's talk. Hang on. We'll get to this.
Fine.
Sexual orientation wise.
The kids today don't care about labels.
I don't see you caring about labels. You know, you're into dudes, you're into girls, whatever.
B.
You're 15 and a half years old. You were born in 2000, what, 1? 2? 2000?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2000.
Let's make the next 100 years the century where nobody has to go around saying, I'm gay, I'm bi, I'm a lesbian, I'm whatever.
I'm supposed to make that happen?
I'm not so into the word fluid because it just sounds like a weird word. It's kind of like moist.
You sound sebaceous.
I'm into everybody just being whatever they want to be and loving the people they want to love.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't have to say what you are. You don't have to search for anything, Noah.
But that was not what he was asking about.
He wants relationship advice. I don't know. Be nice.
Be nice. That was again my top of my list. Be nice.
Be nice. Take care of the other person before you take care of yourself.
Listen more than you talk.
Yeah. And by take care of the other person before you take care of yourself, I don't mean
let them walk all over you.
I mean, be thoughtful.
Yes.
Think of the other person first. For example.
And if they do walk all over you, kick them to the curb. You deserve better.
For example, when I'm at the grocery store thinking about what I'm going to make for dinner,
mm-hmm.
I think about you. I think, what will he not hate?
Thank you for that.
And then I make something that might push your boundaries a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
For the sake of, you know.
You'll get me a green cauliflower that looks like it was pried up from the bottom of the sea.
Yeah, and wasn't it good? It was real good.
It's okay.
It was great. You don't even know.
I didn't gag.
Yeah, exactly. This is from Wilson. Hey, guys. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Hey!
I'm catching up with the December, January.
Or as they do on the Stephanie Miller show.
Okay, I'm catching up with the December, January, February podcast as fast as I can, and I would like to share a few comments. I threw my back out recently and was prone for a full day on painkillers and muscle relaxants, which made me incredibly loopy. I set the podcast app running for about 6 episodes of LK TV, and just FYI, your voices are rather soothing.
ASMR? What's that thing called? The thing that
I think that is what it's called.
Yeah. Soothing.
Your voices are rather soothing, and the unconscious LK-themed drug-induced trip was surprisingly comforting. So, that's an added benefit for Patreon supporters.
Good to know.
I didn't say that. He's saying this.
Funny.
Regarding this morning's episode of February 6th, where you reviewed Hail Caesar, 3 quick notes. Number 1, Alonzo used to be my favorite.
Well.
But Dave managed to use both all y'all and fixin' to in the same sentence.
you're gifted that way.
And that sort of makes him my new hero.
You're a redneck prodigy.
Regarding the wished-for Spielberg musical, let us not forget but bask in the glow of the opening Anything Goes number from Temple of Doom.
Exactly. That's why I think between that and the Jitterbug sequence in 1941, it's like this guy needs to make a full-on musical.
Yeah. Number 3, the throwaway Sam Pancake reference made me happy. Shout out. And finally, regarding Christmas movies, if you are counting Die Hard as a Christmas movie,
which we are,
what are your thoughts on The Long Kiss Goodnight?
Also a Christmas movie.
It's funny that you should ask that question. Why don't you explain how that relates to you and your work and the book you've written?
My scholarship in the field?
Yes.
Yes, well, I certainly included The Long Kiss Goodnight in my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. It's written by Shane Black, who also did Lethal Weapon and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Iron Man 3, all of which managed to make Christmas a part of the action, and I mean action literally. And The Long Kiss Goodnight, absolutely. In fact, if you go to YouTube and look at the sizzle reel for the book, where it has clips from all the movies, there's a very prominent there's actually several prominent clips from that movie, both the beginning of the movie where Gina Davis is playing Mrs. Santa Claus in the, you know, idyllic town's parade, to the giant explosion at the end. There's also a great sequence involving carolers being held hostage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, totally a Christmas movie. I love it.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
All right. This is from Clint. Oh, and regarding your drugs and us, you're welcome.
Yes. Yeah. Happy to be there.
This is from Clint, and he sent us this message on Patreon.
Ah.
Yeah. And he says, there is a See's Candy at North Park Mall in Dallas.
No,
yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah. I always walk past it going to the AMC theater.
Ah, right.
I was turned off by the matronly uniforms, so I never went inside.
They dress like nurses so that you know that the chocolate is pure.
Here's the thing about the uniforms that the people wear.
Uh-huh.
I think they're the greatest uniforms of all time.
I love the idea of you know, people who are purveyors of food looking like they're in an infirmary.
Yeah. Well, it's just...
it's like those old ice cream boxes we have, and the brand name is Sanitary.
Right.
Because that's what you're looking for in an ice cream.
You're going to have to take pictures of those boxes now and put them on the
thing. Yes, we should.
What's the trendy word? The optics of See's Candy. Their shops look beautifully old-timey.
Yes.
And black and white. Everything's black and white.
Yeah, it's like going to a pharmacy.
White tile with, you know, black trim on everything. And those uniforms, particularly on the women, are... I don't know how long See's Candies has been around.
A century or so.
But it looks like those uniforms were last updated in 1937. And I can't express how wonderful it makes me feel to see people sort of dressed in that way. In a store that exists only to sell chocolates.
Yes. I want my confectionaries to be from a 1920s delivery room.
Yeah. So he says, but y'all enjoy it. I will have to give it a try. Oh, yeah, you will. Oh, yeah. Guess what? You're going to get real excited when you put those candies in your mouth because their chocolates are so nice.
And here's the thing. You buy a nice small bag of five or six pieces.
And it's cheap.
You put it in your pocket. You take it inside the AMC theaters.
There you do, yeah.
And you enjoy them in the dark instead of paying an insane amount of money for a bunch of processed waxy crap that they sell at the theater.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Sneak that food into that AMC.
Uh-huh. Smash the state.
This is from Ed. Hey, guys. I'm a happy Patreon subscriber here.
Yay! Thank you, Ed.
You had me at exclusive interview with Brian Fuller. Great list on your recent LK cast of 10 movies that get Texas right.
Hmm.
Even though my only actual experience of Texas was the Air Force in the 1970s, here are 10 more that seem to know what they're talking about, and they are seriously great movies in alphabetical order. Blood Simple.
Totally.
Which is fantastic. Boyhood.
You bet.
Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean.
Mm-hmm.
The Getaway.
Sure.
The Last Picture Show.
Totally.
Last Picture Show is one of my all-time favorite films.
Great movie.
No Country for Old Men.
Yep.
Office Space.
Totally.
Sugarland Express.
Yes.
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Yes. Although, that movie I will always judge against the screenplay they never quite made.
All right.
Which was published in Film Comment, mind you.
Yeah, yeah.
Before the movie came out, I believe L.M.K. Carson wrote it.
Okay.
And it was a very funny satire about Texas excess. It was, you know, it was the 80s and it was prime yuppiedom. And I think that the Leatherface family was disguising themselves as these very high-end Dallas caterers. And there was a whole, and like the whole thing took place during Texas OU weekend.
Right.
And it was really funny. And it's not the movie they wound up making. And the movie they wound up making has its appeal and there's some smart stuff to it. But, you know, God, that if that script is floating around on the internet or you can find that old copy of Film Comment, check it out. But yeah, I totally count that one, sure.
He goes on to say, I saw this in a theater when it was first released in 1986. at the long-gone riverside in Durham, which was so run down by that time that it chained the fire exits shut. I prefer this sequel to the original, which I only saw on VHS, and which isn't as funny.
True.
Also because my husband-to-be nearly didn't make it through the disc jockey face mask scene, and because Dennis Hopper. Number 10, The Thin Blue Line.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So this list is 100% knife.
Absolutely. Boy, I'll tell you, I saw The Thin Blue Line within 3 months of moving to Dallas.
Yes.
Like, right before
I moved... So it scared you to death.
Before I moved to Dallas, I saw The Thin Blue Line, and I saw Oliver Stone's talk radio. And I was like, what am I doing? Where am I going?
Yeah,
what
where am I moving this? Into? Honorable mentions, Grindhouse.
Sure, yeah.
Kid Blue, a forgotten and underrated 70s Western comedy.
James Frawley?
About capitalism versus the frontier in Dimebox, Texas.
Hmm.
And Dennis Hopper.
Okay.
Tender Mercies.
Oh,
Tender Mercies is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Also, what would be on your list of movies with the worst Texas accents? And he says, maybe Arthur Penn's The Chase?
Ooh, yeah, that's up there for sure. Charlie Wilson's War.
Charlie Wilson's War. That was the first thing that popped into my head.
Bad Texas accents. That's the one that leaps out. I'm sure
it could be anything. I mean, so many big movies set in any part of the South. Whether it's the Deep South,
Hudson and Giant.
Yeah. You know, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
That's Georgia. That movie's set in
Savannah. No, I'm talking about the South.
Oh, the South, okay, in general. Oh, okay, yes.
All major motion pictures set in the South run the risk of getting the regional dialects.
Sure, they treat the South as the South.
Right.
When even like there's a
West Texas does not sound like East Texas.
Exactly, North Georgia and South
does
Georgia.
Does not sound like South Texas.
Does not sound like Louisiana.
Does not sound like Oklahoma. Well, Oklahoma and North Texas.
Yeah.
They're roughly the same thing. But then, you know, you get into Louisiana, Alabama.
Mississippi,
Georgia. Other, like, the southern part of Georgia. Like, it's...
Even East Tennessee and West Tennessee, probably, I think.
Yeah. So there's... It's everywhere. And I remember very distinctly Charlie Wilson's War... Julia Roberts.
Goo.
Who is from Georgia and just thought, okay, I'll just do
I can. I can do this.
I'll do my Georgia thing.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Yeah. And Tom Hanks, I think, also doing something weird, and he was playing a Texas congressman. But yeah, that list is 100% knife for sure.
Okay, this is the one from Harold. Hi, guys. You have not read my last two letters. And here I am sending you another. When will this become a stalker issue? Okay, so Harold, I'm the problem here. Not only did I accidentally sit on all three of your letters, but I lost the first two of them. So I owe you a cookie bouquet or, you know, something. It's my fault.
Ay-ay-ay. Well, anyway, we have letter three. Go for it.
Someone in a letter you read, he says last week, this was like December or January, asked about your book preferences, and I was waiting in vain for my favorite, and it is movie related. I found Father of Frankenstein by Christopher Bram in the discount section of Barnes & Noble and bought it based on the summary on the dust jacket, and I loved it. Several months later, the movie Gods and Monsters came out, and I was doubly excited because the movie was excellent and the adaptation was kind of amazing. I searched out other titles by Christopher Bram, and he quickly became my favorite living author.
Hmm.
The Notorious Dr. August, his Real Life and Crimes, is probably my favorite, and I would love to see a movie made of it, though it would have to be a Mildred Pierce-style miniseries, given the scope and subject matter. And as flawed as Isn't She Great is, it did inspire me to read Valley of the Dolls.
Hooray!
And I agree with you, Andrew Droege, it is actually great. No, it is actually great. Valley of the Dolls, the book, is incredible. Such an incredible work of fiction that the literary establishment, which was entirely male in the mid part of the 20th century,
yeah,
and still mostly is,
right,
tossed aside, a trashy bestseller not worthy of serious consideration. But Jackie Suzanne was doing things that no one else had the...
Nards.
The, yeah, to do, to say. And the way to write in such a raw, strange way.
Yeah.
Yeah. All y'all read Valley of the Dolls.
Yes.
Yeah. I love listening to your podcast, but they are entirely too short. More tangents, please. Thanks, Harold. Harold, you're great.
Thank you, Harold.
Thank you. From Kevin. Hey there. I was just writing back to encourage you to watch Afterlife, The Quiet Earth, and Three Iron, since I can't imagine either of you would fail to appreciate them. On the other hand, I thought you would like City of Hope and The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, too, so what do I know?
Wait, is Afterlife... Is that the Japanese movie, or is it the... What's the one...
That's not that one with Christina
Ricci. It's not that one with Christina Ricci.
No, I don't think it is.
Ugh.
That can't... No, that can't be the one.
Okay.
Yeah. If you do watch and enjoy any of the three, I think it should count as extra credit for me.
Yes. I hear The Quiet Earth is good. I don't know what the other one is.
Yes, that's right. I'm angling to lift my grade from a B to an A. Was he one of your students? Is that what he's talking about?
No, no, no. He's talking about because we gave him an 80% knife because we didn't like Diving Bell or City of Hope.
Thanks as well for answering my book question. I've read many of your favorites. Don Powell, however, is a gap of mine, and I will pick up My Home is Far Away soon. Again, my very best, Kevin. David Alonzo. Having just completed my 2015 year in film, I have finally settled on a solid top 10 list. This obviously came from January. Mm. Would love for you to knife it.
Okie doke.
Number 10, Love and Mercy.
Didn't see it.
Me neither. Number 9, The Big Short / 99 Homes.
I can see the grouping there. Yeah, okay, sure.
Number 8, Ricky and the Flash.
No!
Parenthetically, which I seem to be the only person who loves.
Oh.
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Inside Out.
Yeah.
Room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mad Max.
Yes.
Spotlight.
Yeah.
Bridge of Spies.
Okay.
I liked Bridge of Spies.
It's all right.
Carol.
Yeah.
You're 90% knife there.
Yeah, yeah.
In addition to these, I also loved Star Wars, Creed, Grandma, I'll See You in My Dreams. What was I'll See You
that
in My Dreams?
That was the Blythe Danner one. It was good.
Hmm. Trumbo,
mm-hmm.
Crimson Peak,
mm-hmm.
Mistress America.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for reading. I've enjoyed listening to your podcasts. I've enjoyed listening to your podcasts since you first started, and I was still in high school. Keep up the great work, Michael.
Thanks, Michael. We're old.
Hello, DJ, Mrs. Dave White, and Morocco Mole. DJ Mrs. White was my live journal name.
Yes, and Morocco Mole was mine.
Yeah, and that was because of when I first started DJing for money. The friend that I started with at his birthday party said, you need to have a stupid DJ name.
Right.
I was like, how's...
Like DJ Tanner.
How stupid? And he's like, no, it needs to be real stupid. So I was looking at the Clue board game that was sitting on the floor by the desk. And I thought, I'm DJ Mrs. White in the library with the lead pipe. And that became my DJ name. I shortened it to DJ Mrs. White.
Right.
For short, for Live Journal.
And Morocco Mole.
And now you know.
Morocco Mole is the bespectacled sidekick to Secret Squirrel in the old Hanna-Barbera cartoons.
Right, and he has your glasses.
And I wear big giant glasses. So. Yeah. Yeah.
And back in the day, in the 90s.
When you wrote
a zine.
That would later turn into Exile in Guyville.
No. No.
Well, no. Okay, fine.
Wrong.
Right. Okay, the zine did not turn into Eggs on Guy, but when you wrote a zine about your personal life and I was in it...
Your name in the zine was Morocco Mole.
Right.
Yeah.
But then I also became Morocco Mole in
Morocco Mole in Eggs on Guy, really. Yeah. Anyway, I have a random thought about the Revenge of the Nerds movie series.
Okay.
Is the character of Lamar Luttrell one of the best portrayals of a gay man in the 1980s? Without even reading any further, the answer is yes.
For lack of competition, no question. Certainly in like a mainstream Hollywood movie, sure.
Before I even read the contents of this letter, I'm going to tell you why, and I'll see if he matches me.
Was it the website Lamar Luttrell is the total god of you?
No, in the 90s there was the webzine Blair.
Blair, that was it. Yes,
that we really loved.
Yes, gay or Euro trash.
And they had an article that they wrote called "Lamar Luttrell is the total god of you," which was a fact. Yeah. Lamar Luttrell as a character in The Revenge of the Nerds is forthright and absolutely not the butt of anyone's joke.
True.
The film may have presented him as a comical stereotype, but nobody stepped to Lamar Luttrell. He was a hero.
He has agency.
In the film. And he did it exactly as he chose to do it.
Mm-hmm. Clap your hands, everybody.
Yeah.
And everybody, clap your hands.
All right, here's... So I ask this question for the following reasons. Number one, he is capable.
Mm-hmm.
He is intelligent. He is the moral compass from the group. He's out and a sexual person.
Mm-hmm.
He isn't a victim except for being a nerd.
Right.
He's idolized by Wormser, the child prodigy character.
True.
Thoughts? You're absolutely right.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and unlike the main hero of Revenge of the Nerds, he doesn't date rape anyone. So.
Exactly.
Kudos, Lamar Luttrell.
Indeed. Yeah, that's right. Lamar Luttrell, the true hero of that movie.
Yes.
Love the show. That's from Reese.
Well, and Booger.
All right. It wouldn't be a collection of letters without a second one from Noah. Here are his favorites from 2015.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. His favorite performances.
Oh, all
from
right.
2015.
Okay.
Liev Schreiber in Spotlight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Abraham Atta, Beasts of No Nation.
Oh, totally, yes.
Idris Elba, Beasts of No Nation.
No question.
Chiwetel Ejiofor, Z for Zachariah.
Yeah.
Steve Carell, The Big Short.
Okay.
Oscar Isaac and Alicia Vikander in Ex Machina.
Yep.
Jacob Tremblay in Room.
Yeah.
Kitana Kiki Rodriguez in Tangerine.
Mm-hmm. Although...
Big ups.
Although I like, her. I think Maya Taylor is actually the better one in Tangerine.
I don't make distinctions. I think they are both astounding, and they are my new favorite screen team of human beings.
They're awesome, but if I had to pick one from that movie, I would probably go Maya. But I will allow Kiki for sure.
Alexander Skarsgård in Diary of a Teenage Girl.
Oh yeah,
and Cate Blanchett in Carol.
Yes,
he says this is probably her best performance.
I am inclined to agree.
I went over to a friend's home, who is also a film critic.
But is this still...
This is still Noah.
Okay.
And I tried her Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice cereal.
Which we received, but did not keep.
I tried the Batman cereal first. Dave, I need you to know something. If you have not tried that Batman cereal, keep it that way. And let Alonzo hog all of the awfulness to himself. It is disgusting.
That's the strawberry chocolate one?
Yeah. The caramel crunch, on the other hand, is fine. Goodbye, Noah. We gave away...
the whole box.
The entire set. The cereal, the bowl, the spoon, the bat cape, the Superman cape.
The bat mask.
The bat mask, the giant box it came in.
Yes.
All of that went to our artist friend...
Johnny Jungle.
And host of his own podcast called Let's Gay.
Right.
Johnny Jungle Guts. This is from Robbie. Hello, Alonso Duralde and friend. Oh, wait, this is the second one from Robbie.
Ah.
Yeah. Oh, no, wait. Robbie sent us an LKTV letter that I just read like 2 hours ago.
Gotcha. Keep it together.
Hello, Alonso Duralde and friend. First of all, boy, do I love Matt Manola Dargis. Even in past episodes, when she poo-poos on movies that I love, like Under the Skin and The Wolf of Wall Street, her appearances continue to be the linoleum knife event I await all year. Okay.
We just saw her today.
Robbie, I have to tell you something that happened today. Earlier this afternoon, I was digging out all of these emails and putting them into one file. I was doing this at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Library, where Alonzo was seated by my side doing research for an essay that he has to write for a film festival. As we were both working on our separate projects, in walks Manola. And she surprised us both by sitting down at the table and without it, like, as quiet as, like, a cat. Like, when I looked up, she was sitting there just looking at us. And I was like, what? And it was at the exact moment that I was cutting and pasting this letter from you to us, and I was putting it into the Word file that I read it from when I'm reading these letters on the show, I turned my laptop around and let her read this first paragraph. And she said, oh, that's so lovely. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. He says, her appearances continue to be the linoleum knife event I await all year.
Right.
Two reactions. So he's reacting to this best of
2015.
Which, you know, I want to tell people to go listen to, but the sound quality is such a disaster.
Well, no, we put up a second version that was better. And actually somebody mailed me even a third version that's even better than that.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't want to put it into iTunes again just because we already had two in there. Maybe I'll like post it on Patreon, but make it something that anyone can access. I'll try and do that.
Two reactions. I am with the linoleum knife crowd. Room is crap. Manola is correct that the second hour is just garbage made for cable BS. And because I don't personally know any of the film critics that praised this movie, I feel comfortable in saying this. In the same vein that losing a parent can make you more susceptible to manipulative death scenes, being a parent most likely makes one more vulnerable to maudlin crap that extracts pathos from a parent-child situation and more likely to outright ignore the fact that Room is mediocre filmmaking at best. All caps, the gauntlet is thrown!
I agree. Tell that to Oscar winner Brie Larson.
Dude, I say this all the time. Guilt Trip with Barbara Streisand and Seth Rogen. Not a good film. I cried at the end of Guilt Trip. Do you know why? My mother had just died. The end. That's all. It was the reason. You were with me.
Yes.
I walked out of that screening, and the first thing I said to you was, I miss my mom. I had to write an entire paragraph disclaimer at the beginning of my review that week saying, look, I don't know if this is a good or a bad movie. My mom just died. Get off my back. Two. Alonso, your dismissal of The Look of Silence is a bunch of hooey. But so is The Tribe.
Oh, well.
My problem with that movie kind of coincides with everyone else on the panel. It is a well-shot exploitation film, and that's fine if it were being received that way. But I can't take it seriously when people try to call it high art. I think there's a weird habit of art film audiences to praise a movie for being alienating and austere while it has no content and no point of existing. When the movie forces me to endure a graphic 10-minute abortion sequence, why did I have to go through that? I'm telling you. Green Inferno. I could watch a toddler gnaw on another human's leg. Pro-cannibalism the entire way throughout that film. And that sequence in The Tribe nearly did me in. And I got the cast iron stomach. He says, what point is this movie making with that sequence? If I was watching a movie like 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, there would actually be an underlying reason for that kind of thing. But the director of The Tribe just seems to think that the longer he unblinkingly stares into the meaningless human cruelty, the more meaningful his movie can seem. I'm sorry, this is just arthouse emptiness, and I just don't see what's so great about it.
Well, let's have to agree to disagree then, won't we?
Now that I've pissed some people off, here is my top 10 list of 2015. Attached also is my top 10 of 2014.
Boy.
An honorable mention for the first list is The Assassin, which I will probably be kicking myself for not including on the list proper by the time I watch it again. 2015. Mad Max.
Yep.
Carol.
Mm-hmm.
It Follows.
Sure.
Sicario.
Mm-hmm.
Ex Machina.
Mm-hmm.
The Duke of Burgundy.
Didn't see it.
Me neither. And it's sitting on top of Mount Unwatched. Anomalisa.
Yeah.
Inside Out.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven Knows What. Which one was that?
That was the one with the guy with the three names. He was in one of the X-Men movies, and he was in Queen and Country playing a heroin addict. But he always looks like a heroin addict. I thought actually seeing him play one would just be too much, so I didn't see it.
Phoenix.
Which you loved, and I have still not seen.
100% knife there, yep. Robbie. All right, let's give him his 2014.
All right.
2 days, one night.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to make an announcement?
Do you want to?
Sure. Our next Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode is going to be 2 days, one night.
Yes.
The most recent release that we have done to date. Our first subtitled film.
True.
But don't freak out. It's 85 minutes long.
Yes.
Our first by the Dardenne brothers, who are geniuses. It's an important movie that's entirely watchable. It's not homework, I promise. It's got incredible performance by Marion Cotillard.
Academy Award nominated.
Yeah. So, Number two, Stray Dogs. That's right.
Oh, I never saw that one. But, yeah.
Boyhood.
Yep.
Inherent Vice.
No.
My yes counts against your no in a completely obliterating way.
Wrong. Yep. Move on.
The Guest.
Didn't see it. I still need to see it.
It's,
Mount Unwatched.
It's on the stack. Eda.
Yeah.
The Babadook.
Mm-hmm.
Grand Budapest Hotel.
Sure.
Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
Under the Skin.
Yes.
You are
95% knife.
You're 100% knife, Robbie.
Shush.
Shame on me. I never sent a fifth anniversary tribute.
Is this a different letter?
Same letter. I've already been going on forever, so I'll just say that Linoleum Knife has not only enriched my movie love, it has truly enriched my life.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you.
Thank you both for this wonderful show, Robbie.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Robbie. We like to think that we enrich.
We emulsify.
This is from LD.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, DNA, I love your podcast, but next time you have two guest critics on your show, please let them sit in the same room as you two and not in the kitchen with the help.
Sorry. It was a mistake. No, luckily, our other audio engineer friend, not our local one, but our East Coast one, sent me a better version of that sound file. So I will totally put it on Patreon.
All right.
And I'll make it a page that's accessible to everyone. So go to patreon.com/linoleumknife. At some point in the near future, I will repost the Best of 2015 episode with Manola and Robert Abley and Peter DeBruges in a way that they are much more audible than they were in the previous versions. Sorry about that. It's gotten to now, basically this year, whenever we have a guest on, they get my mic. I take the crappy mic because I bellow. And
here's the thing. We're going to discard those crappy mics, and we're going to buy extra ones that are just like these.
I don't know that it's the mics.
These nicey, nice mics.
I don't know if it's the mic's fault. I don't know what it's about.
It's got to be.
It could be.
It's got to be those garbage mics.
I don't know. Maybe. In any event, like, you know, you'll note the Genuato episode, you know, you could totally hear her. And I just
talked about your mic.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is from Bob. Gentlemen, after hearing you discuss The Big Short and hearing you read a couple of letters, I would like to add to the discussion.
Okay.
First, I think it's an important movie and book since it offers a different narrative from the political spin which puts the full blame on the 2008 crisis on either the subprime loans themselves and or the derivative instruments that were created to sell the mortgages to the public. However, as Michael Lewis points out, the credit default swaps and obligations... Now I'm just reading sounds.
No, go on. I know what you mean.
...were a much bigger problem, and their total value dwarfed the value of the mortgages themselves.
Gotcha.
I do not gotcha, but I'm going to keep reading.
The credit default swaps was the...
I'm going to keep reading. Okay, fine. I am not Margot Robbie in a bubble bath, but let me try to explain it with an example.
Okay.
Suppose you have a 12-year-old niece, and suppose you have a spare $100,000. You begin to... I do have a 13-year-old niece. Someone get me a spare $100,000. Because I learn by doing. You begin to think that the chances of your niece dying in the next year are very low. So you think if you can find someone to buy insurance policies based on her life, you are practically guaranteed to keep the premiums. Now suppose that the demand for those insurance policies is surprisingly strong, and you not only have no problem selling $100,000 worth of policies, but you still have people wanting to buy more. Also suppose that having so many people wanting to buy insurance creates greed and an incentive to sell more than $100,000 worth of insurance because, you know, you just can't lose. So you sell $1 million worth of insurance. Unfortunately, your niece tragically dies prior to the policy expiring. And lastly, suppose that instead of declaring bankruptcy or trying to find financing to pay off the policies, you ask the government to bail you out. And they do. If you had sold $100,000 worth of insurance, your spare cash would have been gone, but you would have been okay. But since you got greedy and didn't properly manage risk, you should have been ruined, if not for a government bailout. Second, the act of shorting generally isn't a bad thing. Under normal circumstances, it will create a red flag for someone who is long in that investment or considering going long. Huh. You ask yourself if you truly want to own something that someone else strongly believes will depreciate in price. That's from Bob in Omaha.
All right.
Mutual of Omaha.
Food for thought. Thank you, Bob.
I still don't get it, but it's fine because I probably will never get it because I'm an idiot.
Well, you understood the second part, right?
Kinda, yeah.
The idea of that shorting exists not just as a way to, you know, feast on the carcass, but as a way to tip off other people, hey, there might be something here where maybe you shouldn't sink all of your savings into this particular,
all right,
you know, investment.
Maybe.
Well, let's move on.
I'm a lot better with cookie recipes.
I can sense the panic radiating off of you. So.
It's that thing. Okay, when I was in first grade, my teacher was teaching us, you know, math.
What was her name?
Miss Rose.
Mm-hmm.
She married my fourth grade teacher, Mr. Vadler. Mm. And apparently they're still married because I hunted them down on Google. They're real old, but they're still together. We were adding the numbers, you know, 3 + 6, 2 + 5. Easy first grade stuff. Then she introduced the addition of double digits. 9 + 11, 13 + 17. I freaked out and started crying. And I've kept crying.
And you
crying.
Haven't stopped.
I have not stopped crying. I've cried from the age of 6 to the age of 51 every time a number floats in front of my face. Numbers happen to me, and I go...
Last week, you had a recipe that called for 55% cacao chocolate chips.
Yes.
And you listed off all the different kinds that they had at the store, yes. And they didn't have 55.
Yes.
But they did have 45.
Yes.
And they did have 65.
Yes.
And I said, well, if you use half 45 and half 65, you'll get 55. And you responded, math. And that was just, that was the conversation.
This is a PS from Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Am I the only one who expects Alonzo to shout "Cinema" as your intro music is playing?
Apparently not, since Bibbs did it when
Bibbs,
he
Bibbs said "movies." this is from Rob. Have we had any letters from any women this entire show?
Well, maybe Danny. We'll
we don't know. We don't know Danny's gender.
No.
Hi, David Alonzo. Rob again. Rob from Dubbo again. A couple of points I wanted to bring up following the award nominations.
Mm-hmm.
So this is from earlier.
Yeah,
in the
we're
year.
Keeping it timely.
Regardless of whether Iñárritu does or does not win back-to-back Oscars, will people remember either Birdman or The Revenant in 5 years' time? Neither film strikes me as having longevity in the public consciousness. For me, personally, The Revenant was a pretentious bore fest that, while technically well-made, was excruciating to sit through, with the exception of Tom Hardy.
I could see the Revenant not being one that people go back to. Birdman, maybe, because at least has a sense of humor to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think people in the theater, you know, because it's such a movie about actors and acting,
right,
and the stage will, yeah, probably, you know, it'll be a callback. But, yeah, he did win back-to-back, and it just goes to show you how meaningless this whole thing is. Okay. What else?
Is Mad Max Fury Road a genuine chance of winning Best Picture? I have the answer. I know the answer to this one. No.
But it did win more Oscars than any other movie this
year. It sure did.
So there's that.
Considering there were only 8 Best Picture nominations, which additional 2 would you have liked to see included?
Carol.
Personally, Straight Outta Compton, Creed, Star Wars, Inside Out, and Ex Machina were all worthy in my mind. Carol, was Carol not nominated
Carol
for Best Picture?
Carol was not nominated for Best Picture.
The Assassin.
I would say...
Because it's the best film of the year, The Assassin.
I would say Carol and Anomalisa.
Yeah. On a completely different note, I recently watched The Identical. Well, that's a coincidence. Because that is our very first... not our very first.
Very
that
next.
That is our next, our second Linoleum Knife Club meeting movie.
Yes. If you are a Patreon member at the level of club meeting,
which is the $12 member level,
up,
I think, yeah,
yeah, you get to you'll be watching the Identical with us on Saturday night, March 26th. We'll be streaming it and then having a Google Hangout to talk about it during the movie.
He says it was a glorious experience. That's from Rob. This is from Ryan.
We do get letters from women, I swear.
We do, a lot, actually. It's just this batch. Just, yeah. Yeah. From Ryan, greetings from Austin, Texas. I will try my best to keep this short, as I am sure you are running behind on mail. Dude, we are always running behind on mail.
And we appreciate it. Thank you guys for, you know, caring enough to send letters our way.
I came to Linoleum Knife through What the Flick.
Yay.
After admiring Alonzo on the show. Him being one of my favorites.
Oh, thanks.
Second only to William Bibbiani, who might just be my spirit animal. Bibbs?
Way to undercut a compliment.
We got one for you. after listening to the podcast, I began to truly admire Alonzo's co-host, this gravel-voiced art film lover. It was soon after I realized something shocking. Mr. Dave White and I attended the same college.
Ah.
Yes. After a few references to West Texas and KTXT, I realized that Dave White was an alumnus of Texas Tech, and it was a delight to hear that a person I so admired and I had such a connection, albeit several years apart. Yeah, well, that's, you know. Hmm. I'm your grandpa, most likely. I myself am a semi-successful, aspiring film and theater critic, still not getting paid, but my work seems to be respected, and you two are inspirations for my craft.
Oh, golly, thanks.
To the point, I would be honored if you two would knife my list, but first a question. Dave White, how did you find quality art films during your time at Texas Tech in West Texas. Was the library as helpful in your day as it was in mine, or did you have another secret avenue? Well, I was there in the 80s, and they were not in the habit of collecting VHS tapes of art films at the Texas Tech Library at that time. Furthermore, I did not have a VHS player.
Oh.
I didn't even own a television. Like, I... And not until my last year of school did I have a roommate situation where anybody owned a VHS player or a TV. So here's how I did it. First of all, on breaks, I often went home to Dallas and I would just devour everything that was there, no matter what it was. But as time went on, I stopped even going home on breaks. I would stay and go to summer school, or I would work during the break because all the other employees at whatever job I had, they were all students too, so they would go home, and I would get all their hours. And because it was a break, it was a ghost town, so I got all their hours and nothing to do.
Nice.
So it was like this perfect way to make money, and that's all I cared about. Because I worked three jobs at the same time, almost consistently throughout college, piecing my week together with job hours here, job hours there, a class here, a class there. I had a lot of energy. I was quite young. Those days are done. Here's the way it worked. Texas Tech had film appreciation classes, and the professors would publish the list of films that the classes were going to watch at the student center. The UC, I believe it was called. Anybody could go. So the film class students had to go, but anybody could go and buy a ticket.
Yeah, Chapman sends out a weekly email that lists all the screenings. So, like, I've had people show up who are not students of mine who just wanted to see a movie I was screening or, you know, hear a guest I had.
So these were film classes where you had to go to a central theater location on the campus to see the movie,
right,
if you were in the class. And they were, you know, they were projecting these old films for these classes. So I did that. Also, Texas Tech at that time had a film society, and they would show stuff.
Yeah.
And they would show art films. That's how I saw Fanny and Alexander. That's how I saw The Official Story. That's how I saw, gosh,
yeah,
so many other films with subtitles.
I used to run the one at Vanderbilt.
Yeah. That's how I saw The Seventh Seal for the first time. What are you laughing about?
I was thinking of a story. I took a date my freshman year to see The Seventh Samurai.
Yes.
I went to the bathroom.
A lady date. Yeah.
I went to the bathroom and I came back. I was like, did anything happen? She goes, no, not really. And then a major character gets carried dead across the screen.
You're like, I'm the wrong sexual orientation.
She was not a subtitle person.
Women are not going to work out for me.
It was in that moment, no.
Every once in a while, an art film would play in Lubbock. I don't know why and I don't know how, but every once in a while, one of them would sneak into one of the local movie theaters.
Well, you were a college town.
Okay. Be that as it may, to call Texas Tech a college town simply meant, at least in the 1980s.
Yeah.
I don't know what the academic standards are now or what the student population is like now, but I'm going to guess that they are as dumb as rocks, just like they were then. And no, that it's the same diploma factory that it was then.
But
that's just my guess.
Look, I was in Nashville in the 80s, and it was the same deal where, like, randomly in the far suburbs, some, like, little indie or art house movie would open for a week. and you'd have to schlep out there to go see it, and it, and they weren't promoting it at all, and then it, you know, you didn't see it that week, it was gone, you know.
So then every once in a while, friends who had VHS players, they would say, hey, we're going to watch this thing, whatever it was, you know, Decline of Western Civilization, or
Our Hitler.
I saw all the Richard Curran movies that way in the 80s, and those were passed around and passed around and passed around because they weren't at Blockbuster, that's for sure. Then also the mall, South Plains Mall, did midnight movies. So you could go to South Plains Mall on a midnight, on Friday, Saturday night, and see, they had four screens, one of which was always Rocky Horror.
I was going to say.
But Pink
Floyd the Wall.
The other screens were, you know, Eraserhead, Stop Making Sense, Holy Mountain, you know, Clockwork just whatever, Orange. Clockwork Orange. Yeah. So you could go see the weird stuff.
Stoner movies.
At midnight. Pink Flamingos. Like, that was all going to be there.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah, you know, you hunted it down. In the 80s, you hunted it down. And you looked and you searched and you asked your friends and you found the friends who had the VCRs and you know.
You kids today with your BitTorrent, you have no idea.
Anyway, he continues. At any rate, my list of my top 10 favorite films of all time.
All right, let's do it.
Persona.
Oh, sure.
Brand Upon the Brain.
Oh, yeah, good one.
Love Exposure.
Totally.
High Fidelity.
Yeah, yeah.
I like High Fidelity.
It's nice, it's good. Yeah.
Sunset Boulevard.
Sure.
Manhattan.
Yeah.
The Apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Ghost World.
Yes.
Grave of the Fireflies.
Oh, so depressing, but so wonderful.
In the Mood for Love.
Yeah.
That's 100%.
Totally, that's a great list.
It's a full 100% right there. Thank you so much for your time, Ryan. P.S. I'm not usually one for self-promotion, but I believe you two would enjoy the work being done at the site that I contribute to, called Vague Visages, found at vaguevisages.com.
Maybe it's Vague Visage.
Maybe.
Or not, I don't know.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks.
This is from Joe. Dear David Alonso, I wanted to share with you guys my top 10 of 2015 and see if my list is knife worthy. Number one, Mistress America.
Yep.
Anomalisa.
Mm-hmm.
The Forbidden Room, which we just got sent to us, and so I'm very excited that I finally get to see that.
Oh, the Guy Madden.
Did not play in Los Angeles.
I think it played at like the arena for a week.
How come I didn't know about this?
Maybe not even until this year, actually, so, yeah.
Carol.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Steve Jobs was fine.
It was all right.
James White, which is one of the films that's sitting on top of the stack.
Yep.
Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Inside Out.
Mm-hmm.
45 Years.
Mm-hmm.
Ex Machina.
Mm-hmm.
That's 100% knife, dude.
Yeah, no question.
Honorable mentions. Sicario. Uh-huh. Spotlight. Uh-huh. Black Hat. Joy.
Oh,
Clotwood.
Black Hat.
Give it to him.
Move on.
Clouds of Sils Maria.
Yeah.
The End of the Tour.
Did you say Joy in there?
Joy.
No. Also a no. He's 100% knife for his top 10 list.
Okay. It's not Joy is not a good film, but Jennifer Lawrence is just really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Crimson Peak.
Mm-hmm.
While We're Young.
Mm-hmm.
Eden.
Mm-hmm.
Which I missed, and I'm so angry that I missed it. It was here for a week, and it hasn't been made available yet for some stupid reason. The Assassin,
mm-hmm.
Queen of Earth,
mm-hmm.
Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
Sleeping with Other People,
mm-hmm.
The Last 5 Years.
Oh, yeah. God, I forgot The Last 5 Years was last year. It was so early in 2015. Yeah.
Seeing the end of the tour was almost a surreal experience, as it takes place in the city where I grew up, and David Foster Wallace's home, depicted in the film, is about less than 5 minutes away from my house.
Huh.
I'm bummed that it hasn't gotten more love this award season, but I'm happy that A24 itself is doing great.
Yeah. I finally sat you down to watch last 5 years, right?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. You were okay.
It was fine, yeah. Also, an LKTV question. Did you guys see the Get Down sizzle trailer, Baz Luhrmann's new Netflix series?
Oh,
and if
no.
so, thoughts? I haven't seen that trailer yet.
Mm-mm,
when's not. It coming on? When's it start?
Is it even this year? I'm not sure.
I don't know. This is from Jordan. Hey, David Alonso. I'm Jordan.
Well, all right.
I'm Brian Fellow. I'm Jordan, a longtime listener and first-time writer. Warning you in advance, this question is a bit long.
Okay, bring it on.
Can you explain or give some insight on how every year actors sweep the award season? Last year, Moore, Simmons, Arquette all won respectively in their categories from all of the major award shows. Oscars, SAG, Golden Globe, BAFTA, Critics' Choice. How does this happen? I get how the SAG and Academy could overlap, but the HFPA and BAFTAs all picking the same choices seems weird. Yes, sometimes a performance is so undeniable that it makes sense that there's a sweep. Monique in Precious, Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds. But someone like Julianne Moore sweeping? Like, how many people really even saw Still Alice?
Well, you know...
Hang on.
This is a long question.
From an outsider like me, it feels like it's decided beforehand who the winners are going to be for each group. Like some schmuck named Mitchell just gets an email saying, it's been decided, it's Julianne Moore's year. She did some movie called Still Alley or something like that, so vote for her. Yeah, I know that's silly to think, and Moore is great in the movie, but it still leaves me wondering, how is it possible for there to be unanimous winners from all these different organizations year after year? Do you both have any clue on how this happens? What are your thoughts about it? Thanks and love the podcast. Jordan, I have no clue how this happens.
Well,
I don't know.
I would say, you know, given the three specific examples, you know, J.K. Simmons, that was just like that was a big performance that people took notice of, for sure. Julianne Moore, I think it was the timing in terms of it was really great work from her, and she is an actress who has gone unheralded up until this point, certainly by the Academy. And so there was this sort of decision of like, okay, there's no denying this is a really great performance, and with the weight of all these other great performances that we haven't previously honored you for, then, you know, by all means, it's time to make this happen. And I think Patricia Arquette, it was a combination of people really loved Boyhood, and that was a way to honor the film that made more sense than, say, honoring the kid, since he was kind of a non-actor and, you know, newcomer.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's somebody who has certainly paid her dues and done a lot of really good work. And, again, mostly unheralded because she's, you know, a character actress and plays a lot of supporting roles. So, you know, it's just kind of a confluence there. Obviously, no, it's not predetermined or predestined or, you know, there's no fix in. And then also it's just that you're dealing with consensus in all these cases. You know, if you poll individual critics, they're going to have interesting idiosyncratic choices. But then when you put 50 critics in a room and have them agree on something, they may have a whole bunch of different first choices. But if everybody's second choice is J.K. Simmons, then J.K. Simmons wins. You know, so that's a thing that happens when you're dealing with a voting body of any particular size, you know, that it tends to go with something that everybody can agree upon as opposed to this divisive piece of work that some people loved and other people, you know, didn't care about. You know, I was thrilled that Lafka gave Best Actor to Tom Hardy for his work in Locke that same year that we're talking about here. But, you know, that was not a movie that I think a lot of groups, either they didn't see it, or if they did, they didn't necessarily appreciate it or like it or care for it all that much, or think that his performance was all that great because he's sitting and talking the whole time.
Right.
Whereas, so again, so in a group of 50 people, there might be 25 who loved Tom Hardy in that movie, and then among the other 25, either people that didn't see it or were kind of on it or whatever. And then in that same 50 people, you know, 35 of them would put J.K. Simmons in their top three, and then that becomes the consensus, and then that's how he wins. You know, and not to take anything away from J.K. Simmons, I'm just saying that a lot of times, once you're talking about awards, you know, you're looking at something that you've gotten a lot of people to agree on, and so it's going to be something that everybody can point to and go, yeah, that was good. That's just my two cents. I don't know.
That's 2 cents more than I have.
Yeah.
I'm not in any group and I don't vote.
I know.
So none of it makes any sense to me. The Assassin was last year's best film. Ugh,
shut up.
This is from Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, holiday greetings from the frozen tundra of Calgary, Alberta. It's only down to 15 below centigrade this evening. Just wanted to drop a quick note to state that Dave is 2 for 2 on horse movies. First, the touring horse, and now Horse Money. Two challenging sits that are more than worth the effort. Keep up the stellar work, both of you. Looking forward to a horse movie recommendation from Alonzo one of these days. Take care, gentlemen. Kevin.
I wonder what Kevin thought of War Horse.
Touring Horse, Horse Money, War Horse, Dreamer with Dakota Fanning, where she's the little girl that healed, that nurses the broken leg horse back to life.
Mm. I can't...
My niece and nephew used to really be into Racing Stripes. I think that's about a zebra.
Yes, it is. I don't know that I have a horse.
My all-time favorite movie star is a donkey.
I don't know that I have a horse movie. I will say you should read the book of Seabiscuit. I never saw the movie, but the book by Laura, I forget her name.
Laura Horsey Masseurs.
No.
Horse of a course.
No, the woman who wrote the book also that Unbroken was based on. She's a historian.
Know.
Anyway,
yeah,
the book of Seabiscuit is amazing. And I read it one day when I wasn't feeling well and did not put it down. I finished it because it was so good and so riveting. So I don't have any horse movies off the top of my head, but by all means, read Seabiscuit.
This is from Will in West Texas.
Mm-hmm.
How about thank you? I've been listening to the podcast for about a year since I started my first big boy job after graduating from college. I forget how I found you guys. I think Alonzo was a guest on Brett Easton Ellis's podcast.
I was.
But I was thrilled to learn about a podcast about movies from two gay men. I moved to a small town in West Texas from a big town in South Texas with my fiance, and consequently have had to say goodbye to any kind of queer folk I could call friends. Mm. It has been lonely.
Mm.
But y'all's podcast has helped a lot with that. Hearing about your gay escapades...
Woo!
Someone hands you a tambourine.
We're the dullest gay people on earth. Hearing about... I think gay escapades is the portmanteau.
Hearing about your gay escapades in L.A. lets me live vicariously as a gay man. Hearing about your marriage makes me happy and hopeful about my own, albeit mine won't happen for a while. Hearing your little disagreements... Oh, there's nothing little about our disagreements. Makes me think about my own likes and dislikes. One minute I'll agree with Alonzo, the other Dave will say something that makes me change my mind. Most times, I have no idea what's going on because I don't get to see a lot of new movies. I just like listening to you guys. All that's to say that I appreciate you, and thank you for helping me stay sane in a sea of straight folks here. Sincerely, Will in West Texas, but not permanently.
Thank you, Will in West Texas, and be strong. What can I tell you?
This is from Wilson. Dear Alonzo, from Will to Wilson. Mm. Dear Alonzo, I came to Linoleum Knife by way of my friend Matt's podcast, The Sewers of Paris, and I've been thoroughly enjoying catching up with back podcasts from you and Dave. During one of your biographical tangents, not on sewers, but on Linoleum Knife, I was deeply struck at how closely my coming out experience shadowed yours.
Mm.
Among other things, I too did the whole wait until I am out of college until that's paid for strategy before I could come out to family and friends in Nashville.
Oh, wow.
I took it a bit further and waited until I had a job and an apartment and a completely distinct social life so that when I came out to my family and lost everyone and everyone I ever knew, I would be okay. Mm. Happily, I was overprepared.
Oh, good.
As you went on, As you went on, I realized that you were probably designing the program for Vandy's Surratt Cinema while I was a desperate young closet case.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Or at least one of them, going to high school just down the road from you at Montgomery Bell Academy. And taking in whatever movies I could get someone to go to with me at Surratt.
Surratt. Funny.
You may have been the one to introduce me to Strictly Ballroom.
That was after I left. That was the early 90s.
Seriously, someone should have just sat me down and had the "you are gay" talk with me then.
That's Strictly Ballroom, yeah, pretty much.
I want to ask if you were responsible for bringing the loved one to Surratt.
I screened it at some point, yeah, but...
Well, then.
But, yeah, but I mean, if he's talking about Strictly Ballroom, that was, what, 92, 93?
Well,
what,
you, how long were you
there? I was programming it, I was 84 to 88 was my tenure at Vanderbilt, right. So... You know, maybe.
We had to read Evelyn Waugh's book for summer reading at MBA, and I got one of my favorite lifelong friends, Anna Mary, to see the film with me. It was so wonderfully strange, making some narrative sense to me only because I had read the book.
Right.
And I would love to hear your comments on it. Afterward, Anna Mary said, I remember seeing that the first time at the Bell Mead Theater and thinking the same thing I am now. I have no idea what I just watched. Bonus cameo, Jamie Farr. Thank you very much.
The Loved One is a movie I wish I liked more. Like, I revisit it every few years.
I dig The Loved One.
Thinking that it's going to work for me more. And yeah. I love the book.
I'm a big fan of that book.
Have you read the novel?
No.
The novel's great. I think the movie's a bit of a mess, and I don't think they quite nail the tone that Waugh does in the novel. But there are moments in it that are great, and cameos and fun things. But overall, I look at that movie as more of a... I see the potential rather than the result.
This is from Reese.
But, yeah. Oh God, MBA. They were like a debate powerhouse when I was in high school.
Oh, yeah?
That was a big deal, yeah.
Hmm. This is from Reese.
Uh-huh.
Hello, David Alonso. I saw Carol, and I'm going to see it again soon, but I have a question. There was a time that gay men had the hanky code.
Mm-hmm.
Was there something similar with lesbians and nail color? I ask this because in the film, Todd Haynes gives you many lingering shots of Carol's hands and nails, and the nail color seems to correspond to her emotional state. Turquoise at the first meeting, red as the relationship builds, no color as she's going through turmoil after her daughter is taken, and the return of turquoise, I believe, at the end. I'm an avid film goer, and I try to see as many movies as I can, and thanks to the podcast, I went to see The Assassin. Hooray! I am a success! I give my own non-professional reviews on Twitter at 140review, which I have sent y'all. Question. This sentence doesn't make sense. Example, the racism of The Intern compared to other movies based in Brooklyn that opened in 2015.
He has asked his questions on that Twitter.
Oh, okay. Yes. Got it.
I believe his icon is the poo emoji.
Oh, all right. Love the podcasts. Can't wait to give you my money when the subscription service launches.
Hooray.
So that's an old email.
Dave always immediately pointed out that the lipstick and nail polish in Carol tell a color story. I don't know that it was the equivalent to the hanky code. I don't know if lesbians had that, but I'm not a historian of that department, so I don't know for sure. I think that if Todd Haynes put those colors in there, it was for his own use and not
right.
as a reflection of sort of
historical signaling,
you know.
Yeah. No, I've never heard of any lesbian external signifiers
outside of butch and femme
as an assistance to cruising.
Yeah, they lit a lot of cigarettes to figure out what's going on. Probably.
Here's from Mr. M. A. Ross.
Uh huh.
Hey Dave, like you needed any more points on your respect meter from me, but wearing a Venom shirt to a Christian movie just kicked you up a notch or two. I don't know what Christian movie I wore a Venom shirt to. Oh, wait, you know what? The Masked Saint.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is from Matt. Hello, David Alonso. I haven't been listening for a while, but now I am officially caught up with everything. Okay. In case you forgot who I was the guy who put 12 Years a Slave in his top 10 worst of the year 2013 and Dread in his top 10 best of 2012. Long time no see. Here is a list of my favorite films and some terrible films. His best list.
Okay.
Mr. Holland's Opus.
I have never seen it.
I have. I do not like it.
And you're a teacher, were a teacher, so... Bleh.
Number 9, Margin Call, which is great.
Ooh, yeah, good one.
Number 8, Upstream Color, which is great. Number 7, The Kenneth Branagh Hamlet.
Mm-hmm.
Ordinary People.
Mm-hmm.
There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
Annie Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Sideways.
Mm-hmm.
Titus.
Mm.
All the President's Men.
Yes. You get a 90% knife.
You get a 90% knife. Here's his worsts.
Okay.
Rocky V. Well, yeah. Mm. Angels and Demons.
It does have parachuting Ewan McGregor.
It does. The Bonfire of the Vanities. Kicking and Screaming.
Ugh.
The Passion of the Christ.
Oof.
I'm going to skip number 5. We'll get to it in a minute.
Okay.
Grown Ups 1 and 2. It's so bad, it's just one movie. The 2012 version of Red Dawn.
Ugh.
Scoop.
Ugh.
Along Came Polly.
Didn't see it, but I don't want to.
Here's his number 5.
What's that?
War Horse. We're in a fight now.
I wouldn't put that on my worst list, but I didn't like that movie.
We're in a big fight. You and me.
By the way,
at the end of War Horse, the War Horse comes home and the boy is so happy and they stand in the sunlight and you cry.
You cry.
Oh, God, I love War Horse so much.
You cry, Dave White.
Oh, God, it's such a good movie.
Next time you bust my chops for crying in a movie, I'm going to bring up War Horse.
I had no shame.
Fine. Yes, The Bonfire of the Vanities is a terrible movie, but the Devil's Candy about the making of The Bonfire
is a really cool book.
Is a great book.
Yeah.
So you should totally read it.
Hey, this one's from M.A. Ross again.
Well, there you go. He keeps them short.
Hey, Alonzo and Dave. I, too, love brunch. I don't love brunch. I just like breakfast. Any time of the day you plan to serve it. He says, but it has to have mimosas or it's not brunch. Well, then I'm out. Because I don't drink that stuff at... Well, any time. I never.
You don't drink stuff, though. Yeah.
I, too, saw Deadpool over the same weekend, and in keeping with personal annoyances at movie houses, I have a little tale to tell of my own. My husband and I go to an afternoon showing of Deadpool. We grab our popcorn and drinks. We find some comfy seats in a moderately full house. Someone sits behind us. The lights dim. There's about 5 minutes of trailers before the movie starts. Up comes the Marvel logo. The movie is about to begin. The opening credits start, and there is a bit of wit via the names of the people starring in the film.
Right.
From behind, we hear, rather loudly, "Ah ha ha!" The second name comes up. "Ah ha ha!" The third name. "Ah ha ha!" And on and on. And the same guffaw at every single one. And for almost the entire movie, through every joke, that same damn guffaw.
Oh, ouch.
That's when you get up and move.
Yeah.
You got to get up and move for that. Guess what? That's it. That's all the letters.
Really?
Yep. Now, let's say you've listened to this entire episode and you know for a fact that you had a letter that you sent us, an email you sent us that you did not hear. Here's what happened. It's gone. I lost it. I apologize for losing it. If you would still like me to read it on a future episode of Linoleum Knife, please resend. Now, do not resend unless you have already listened to every other episode since that letter, because you might have had it read. Maybe you missed the episode where I read your letter. So do your homework.
Your due diligence.
Then resend it to me and tell me, Dave White, I told you not to be stupid. The end.
Thank you for listening. We will be back later this weekend with a full-on podcast of the cinema, talking about that that Wonder Woman movie that has those other two guys in it, and and some cool smaller films that you should be looking for if they are near you. In the meantime, thank you for listening, and consider joining our club over at Patreon if you want to be part of things like the LKTV podcast and our live club meeting where we're going to watch The Identical and other movies. And drop us a line again at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com if we missed your letter and you need to resend it because Dave is a dummy, or if you want to send us a new one. And, go listen to the stuff that we always tell you to listen to, and we'll do our usual end-of-show stuff on the real show. This is just a little addendum this week. But thank you for listening, and we will catch you real soon.
Goodbye.